Blog Talk Radio.
Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network as we broadcast live from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Our number today, 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944. We're also taking your questions and comments in our flash chat section today. For our guest, the author of the new book, Never Enough Nation, Jeff Gaines joins us. He's the co-author. And more than 60% of Americans, according to the latest research, are overweight, overspent, and overstressed. And all three have increased significantly in just the last 50 years. Jeff Gaines is here to tell us why that is and what can be done about it. Hey, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on the Burke Allen Show.
Thanks for having me, Burke.
So the Never Enough Nation, where did the idea come from?
Well, this book was 10 years in development, 4 years in actual writing. And, you know, the original title was actually called How to Not Be Fat, Broken, Busy.
Yeah.
But some surveys and some focus groups we did turned out that people don't like being called fat. And that really wasn't our message. We didn't want to offend people, but we were really trying to tap into why are those three areas so problematic. And, you know, all three of them have increased significantly, as you mentioned, just in the last 50 years. So we were trying to figure out what was the common theme, what was the common thread. And as we dug deeper into that, we found really what we feel is a mindset that has become just pervasive in the American culture and is one of the factors we think that are really driving those results. So, you know, that mindset, the best summary we could come up with it is, you know, people just can't seem to get enough. And if you feel like you don't have enough, the antidote seems like more. And, you know, what captures the American mentality better than more? You know, it's more spending, more eating, more scheduling, more doing. And that more just doesn't seem to fill the hole. And the result of that is this feeling of never having enough.
The book is The Never Enough Nation. Jeff Gaines is the co-author today. Our number again, 718-506-1944. How much of it do you think really boils down to willpower, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, I think that's really what most people tell themselves. I think the common fantasy out there that people buy into is, oh, I just don't have enough willpower, I just don't have enough discipline. And, you know, there are actually some things you can do to increase your self-control, your willpower, but really to me most of the answer lies on a different side of an equation. So if you could imagine two bar charts or two bars in a bar chart, one of them is self-control. What is your level of self-control? And the other is how much temptation is around you that you need that self-control to control or to exert over. And I think what has happened isn't a decrease in self-control. I think what's happened is we've seen a massive increase in the amount of temptations that we're surrounded by on a daily basis. I mean, we experience more temptation than any society in the history of the human race. And it happened in such a short period of time that I think as a society, as a culture, we just really haven't learned how to live around it. You know, it's like sending a kid into a candy store and telling them not to eat. You know,
you make an interesting point, Jeff, because even, you know, our parents' generation, my parents, I don't believe that my mom and dad ever had credit cards in their entire life. I just don't think that was something that they did. I do remember layaways, which now have come back into vogue a little bit, and I remember, you know, payment plans for my junior high musical instrument. But this amazingly easy access to credit it certainly has to put a lot of pressure to spend on everyone.
That's one of the factors. I mean, credit cards didn't even really come out until, for the most part, the 70s. It didn't even exist. Like you mentioned, it was layaway plans, or you could get an account with a specific store, but that was it. You know, now they're ubiquitous. I mean, you can almost not get by without one nowadays, and that's just one example. I mean, the access to credit, the pressures, and really social expectations to spend, the kind of food that we're surrounded by, the amount of it and the type of it, the amount of distractions. You know, the older generation like to say, you kids today, no self-control, no discipline, you know, like they had when they were kids. But what they don't really take into account is how different life was for them. You know, when they were growing up, if you didn't have the money, you couldn't have it. Not a problem today. You know, they used to call them fat cats. Rich people used to be called fat cats because they were the only ones that could afford to have the super calorie-dense, you know, really bad for you food that would make you overweight. Today, that's the normal food. In fact, today, it costs more money to eat healthy. We should start calling them the not fat cats if you're rich. You know, they're the only ones that can afford to eat right.
Temptations
have just gone through the roof.
The book is called Never Enough Nation. The co-author is Jeff Gaines. It's available in bookstores everywhere, online at Amazon.com. And, Jeff, so marketing then. Marketing and the commercials we see, the billboards that we pass on the interstate, the TV spots, the radio commercials we hear, how much of that has contributed to this issue?
Well, it's certainly, you know, one of the factors you can't help but call out. I mean, it's so pervasive. It's just everywhere. And I think it's one of the factors. We've got a, you know, whole chapter in the book devoted to the changes that have gone on that are creating this mentality of, you know, not feeling like we have enough when all evidence around us, you know, if you compare us to any society in history, we have a remarkable abundance of everything. We have a far better life, you know, in any kind of reasonable comparison. And yet I think most Americans still feel like, you know, my life's okay. I mean, my life's actually pretty good. Logically, people would say that. But they're left with this feeling of, I thought it would be better. And marketing, I think, is one of the most powerful examples of that. Let me get a statistic here in front of me. It used to be, you know, back in the 1960s, people were exposed to about 500 advertisements per day. Today, it's nearly 3,000 per day.
Wow.
And if you think what marketing does, it basically says your life is inadequate. Fortunately, we have the answer. And they offer their product. And it's difficult when you're told that 3,000 times a day to not believe at some level unconsciously that, you know, maybe my life isn't enough. It's hard to not buy into it.
Never Enough Nation is a fascinating new book from author Jeff Gaines. You co-authored this with another gentleman. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, the process of two guys coming at this together, and what was that aha moment when you said, you know, I think we're onto something here.
Well, Jim Sorensen is my co-author, and he's been my mentor in the speaking business for, you know, since I started 16, 17 years ago now. And he's been in the speaking business for something like 30 years. And so, you know, I mentioned 10 years ago is when I started developing this. That's really because I was out, you know, working to help corporations and individuals with a wide variety of issues. And the content just started slowly over time coming together. And when I started actually hacking it out and writing it, you know, I called Jim and said, would you be a part of this? Because what we found is working together when we would throw ideas back and forth, it ended up being far better than anything either of us would have come up with alone. You know, and we both really enjoyed the synergy, to use an overabused word, but, you know, the synergy that comes from what, you know, can be better than the sum of the parts, you know. And you know, for me, the benefit of having someone like Jim, for those who know him, he's an amazing thinker with an amazing history. And so for me, it was quite an honor to have him be a part of the project and, you know, really took it to a whole new level.
If you'd like to find out more about Jeff and Jim's book, you can visit them online at neverenoughnation.com. That's neverenoughnation.com. And in the book, you refer to something you call the never enough mindset, where people are really, you know, scrambling to try to get more wealth, to get less stress, to get, you know, healthier. Give us some specific tips. You know, how do you really take charge of those I guess those internal things that have been influenced by all this external stimulus that can really drive your decision making and habits. And I'll give you an example. There's an analogy of the single mom of two elementary school age kids who works all day. She's totally exhausted, and on the way home, the kids are in the back seat, and they're going, "Mom, let's just do McDonald's. Can I just get a Happy Meal, Mom? You know, I'd love that." And you know, Mom is exhausted and is blown out. What does she do to take charge of zipping on home and instead of giving into that, making the kids a healthy meal?
Yeah, I mean, great example, common one. You know, last chapter of our book are what we call success stories, because we wanted to go out and find people who have, you know, really mastered their, you know, money, food, and stress, their health, wealth, and stress. And one of them is a woman who's a single mom with two kids who works full-time job. And, you know, she lost a lot of weight. Her kids are, you know, spends a lot of time with her kids, works at a high-tech company with a culture of workaholism, you know, that is, it's just what they're known for, and works 30, 35 hours a week, some of those from home. And yet it's still a rising star in that company, which is very unusual. And so, you know, we found an example. And what we did is we wanted to point out people who took, you know, who created success, even given all this temptation around us, and then connect what they did and how they did it to the ideas that we're offering in the book, and to show that, you know, these things really do work. They really do last. So let me circle back around to the beginning part of that question, which is, you know, where does this mindset come from? How do you deal with it? And how does a mom like that, you know, make the choice that she knows she wants to make, that she knows she should make, and yet is often difficult to do? So I, to set that up, I need to explain what we call the internal game.
Okay.
Which is the process of decision-making that we go through, right? So inside each of us are really three different competing forces that take turns driving our actions. There's our logic or our reasoning. There's our emotions, you know, what we want to do, what we feel like we want to do. And then there's our past programming or our conditioning. And we personify those drivers as the thinker for logic, the emoter for emotion, and the robot for habit or past conditioning. So let me do a quick story that would relate to our single mom's dilemma here, of how the internal game plays out and how these three players work together. So let's say someone gets home from work, you know, it's 5, 6 o'clock, they're tired, and they start to contemplate exercise. And so the three drivers, the three players of this internal game go to work. Now, the world kind of evolves around our emotions, the emotor. We can come back and maybe talk more about that later. But the emotor is kind of in charge. The problem is the emotor doesn't really think, so it relies on the thinker for that. And it doesn't have a memory, so it relies on the robot for that. So the emotor says, all right, exercise. Robot, look in the memory banks. What do we have in there for exercise? And the robot says, let's see, exercise, exercise. You hate it. Whining, crying, maybe some bleeding, not your favorite thing. So the emotor says, ick, why would we do that? Thinker, why would we exercise? And the thinker says, well, we got a high school reunion coming up. Let's take a look into the future and see what that's going to feel like. And the emotor goes, ew, I don't want to feel like that. Thinker, come up with a way that we can not look like that at the high school reunion without having to exercise now. And the thinker says, well, we could not eat between now and then, but I'm going to recommend exercise anyway. But here's the thing. It's late. It's dark. There's a lot of cars on the road. If we went for a walk or a jog at this time of night, we might get hit by a car and die. It's a safety consideration. What we need to do is get up tomorrow an hour before work. The roads will be quiet. We'll get a great energy boost on the day, and it'll be wonderful. The emotor goes, great plan. What's on TV? Next day, the alarm goes off an hour early. The emotor goes, oh, heck no. Thinker, get to work. The thinker says, well, we could exercise at lunch. And this sort of internal stories, conversations that we have with ourselves, is the root cause of our decision-making. And most people can relate to that story or some version of it. It goes on inside of us every day, all day long. And what we tell ourselves is, I'm going to have my thinker overpower and dominate my emotor. In other words, I'm going to use willpower to just stuff my emotions down. And it just doesn't work. You know, it works for a couple of days, a couple of weeks. You know, the reason, and most people try willpower, which is the reason I hate January in my gym, right? All the New Year's resolution people huffing and wheezing up and down the court. By February, they've all either quit or died, and we can get back to life as usual. Willpower just doesn't work.
Either is fine, you get your gym back either way.
Right, yeah. The shortest answer is you have to work with the emoter, not against it. We started the call by saying it's not about, you know, willpower and self-control. It's about reducing temptations. The temptation overload, the never enough mindset that people experience is because we don't know how to manage our emoters. We don't know how to feed our emoters. So we use this outside temptations we're bathed in to, you know, just pour onto the emoter, and it's not enough because it doesn't work.
The co-author of Never Enough Nation is Jeff Gaines. He's our guest, and when we come back with Jeff, we're going to ask him about the Never Enough Nation right here in the nation's capital and how the entire sequester issue has played itself out. And is a 2% budget cut really as dire as everyone is talking about? Is this really another sign of the Never Enough Nation? Back with more with author Jeff Gaines right after this on the Burke Allen Show.
Over 14 million people witnessed his emotional story of survival and triumph on national television.
I've been doing this now for so long, like ever since I was a kid.
Millions more voted him their favorite in a landslide win.
The winner is...
And now, you can be a part of the experience live.
Landau Eugene Murphy!
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Ain't that a kick in the head?
Your America's Got Talent winner.
I've got you.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Under my
Live. Performing classics from the Great American Songbook and his Columbia Records debut CD, That's Life.
That's Life.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.'s That's Life Tour. The one concert event this year you absolutely can't miss.
For tour dates and more information, visit LandauMurphyJr.com. Thanks so much for listening to the Burke Allen Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network worldwide. Our number is 718-506-1944. You can also send a message to us in our Flash chat room with a question or comment for our guest, the co-author of the brand-new book, Never Enough Nation. It's Jeff Gaines. And Jeff, here in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital, all talk is about the sequester. And the Democrats and Republicans are in a major knockdown, drag-out fight about these across-the-board budget cuts of slightly over 2%, and the whole world is in a tizzy about it, or so it seems, inside the Beltway. Have we really gotten to a point in America where the country, and maybe us as individuals, we can't even manage to cut 2% from our budget? And if so, is that a symptom of the Never Enough Nation?
Wow. So a couple things. You know, it's often called an across-the-board cut, but it's not really an across-the-board cut. For the most part, entitlements are not touched, and for the most part, revenue is not touched. So, you know, I've heard a number of experts on budget and things like that saying, you know, the reason it's dumb and the reason so many of the experts are calling it dumb is because it leaves alone the two biggest problems we have and goes after all the other areas. You know, it was meant to be something so horrific and such a bad, stupid thing to do that Congress would have no choice but to act. So it's not as simple as, yeah, we should, I mean, we should cut. We need to cut. That's pretty obvious. But let me connect it to, you know, kind of why we do this, or at least my thoughts on why, whether it be budget cuts, tax increases, you know, really pick almost any issue you want. And the problem comes down to this. We as human beings do not make decisions for logical reasons. You know, back to my thinker, emoter, robot characters, we think the thinkers are in charge, but they're not. It's really the emoter. So if you really want to understand why society does what it does, you have to look to what the emoter wants. And from a federal budget point of view, what most Americans want is for lots of spending cuts that don't affect them.
And which is a tough one to pull off.
Which doesn't really happen. It's, you know, we're not going to get it done that way. So, you know, let me make the point about the emoter. The 2002 Nobel Prize in Economics was awarded to a psychologist, which was a weird thing for the economics field, because this psychologist was able to prove that we make decisions emotionally first, and then we use logic to justify them, right? And that spawned a whole new field called behavioral economics, because the economics field realized we have to start taking a look at how people really make decisions and not how we think they should make decisions. And the same is true, really, of politics. You know, we don't send people there that are really hardwired or geared to do the logical thing. And when we do, on occasion, they sneak their way in there, they get pummeled. Because really what dominates the political spectrum is the extremes of left or right, because that's where the most emotion is. The moderate, the reasonable, well-thought-out approach isn't about the emoter. That's where the thinker says, okay, here's what makes most sense. And what's dominating politics today more than ever, I mean, it's always been a factor, but more than ever today, what dominates it is the extremes. I mean, a moderate is not a good thing to be in Washington. You just get pummeled to death from both sides. And even someone like, you know, Obama, who in some ways is liberal, in some ways he's downright, you know, conservative in some of his policies, gets just pounded from both sides, left and right, as being either way too conservative or way too liberal. And, you know, people don't see what is.
Let's bring it inside the typical American home. And by the way, if you're just joining us, our guest is Jeff Gaines. He's co-written a brand new book called Never Enough Nation that's just fascinating about how so many Americans are overweight, overspent, and overstressed, and how that has increased so dramatically in the last 50 years. There's an analogy that you often hear about people who are poor as church mice, but are very, very happy. Jeff, is it possible, in your opinion, based on all the research that you and your co-author Jim Sorensen did in writing this book, is it possible to change your mindset and for some people to truly feel like what they have and sort of who they are is enough, or will there always be people who, no matter what they get, it's never enough?
Well, you can definitely, yes, you can change that mindset to believe that you have enough. Otherwise, there wouldn't be much point in our book, and we can't have that. It is something that absolutely can be done. And it's something that I think has to be done at a personal level. You know, there's New York is doing the thing about limiting the size of drinks that you can have. And, you know, there's other kind of societal or outside-in controls that you could look at. Can we control how much debt someone can have, or control the banking industry for the loans they give? These are all outside-in methods. I don't think the problem is this amazing society that those that came before us created. I think the problem is we don't know how to live in it. We have the ability to live surrounded by all this temptation and to make good choices and to feel like what we have is truly enough. We absolutely have that ability. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the studies around, they find these examples of people who are relatively poor and frugal and how happy they are. If you actually look at the studies around happiness, there's very little connection between the amount of stuff we have or the money we have and whether we feel like we have enough. You could have someone who's very, very wealthy who genuinely feels like their life is enough. And it's not because of the money they have. You could have someone who's, you know, by American standards, poor, who feels like they have enough. But we have been conditioned in the American mindset to believe that there is a certain way and a certain formula and a path you need to take. And if you do that, then you'll feel like you have enough. And the problem is it doesn't create that. You know, that end result doesn't come, because no matter what you create, as long as your mindset is the answer lies in more, when you get more, you still think the answer lies in more, right? So can you change that belief? Absolutely you can. And it's about understanding, you know, how and why our emotors react the way they do, where our emotional responses come from, why we are programmed the way we are, And then how do you change at a fundamental level how you see things, how you interact with the world? It's not as complicated as people think. We just don't have any education on how to do it.
So in the book, in Never Enough Nation, you and your co-author, Jim Sorensen, talk about reprogramming your mind so that temptations are not quite as tempting as they once were. And I'll tell you, as we do this show live around lunchtime, it's one thing to want more of something. It's another entirely to want a different something. And, boy, that cheeseburger sure sounds a lot better than that Caesar salad. So reprogramming your mind, not so much in wanting more, but in wanting something different that may be better for you. What say you? What would you recommend?
Let me do a quick story to illustrate this. There's a movie way back in the 80s called The War Game, War Games, Matthew Broderick. And at the start of the movie, they had these two guys sitting in a missile silo. And, the alarms went off to fire the missile. One guy turns his key, the other guy won't turn it because they both had a tourniquet or the missile wouldn't fire. And the guy who turned his key is pointing a gun at the other one. Turn your key. And the guy says, I can't do it. I just won't do it. And the movie starts with that. And to me, that's an awesome example of what goes on inside our brains and how people try to create change that doesn't work. Because we have our logic and we have our emotion in our thinker and our emoter. And the only way we create change long-term is if both of them turn the key. In other words, willpowering and forcing yourself into what you're supposed to do does not create permanent change in the brain. It's like you're telling yourself logically, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do. But emotionally you're saying, no, I'm not. So the brain knows, don't remember this. Don't change the way you see the world. The trick to long-term change is to get both the thinker and the emotor, both your logic and your emotions, to line up, and then your brain will just automatically generate different desires. But to your question, how do you get the emotor to not want that cheeseburger and to want the salad instead? It's not through what we've been programmed to do, which is to just force yourself against it. The short answer is, gradually then suddenly. That's one of the rules we have. We have 7 rules to really help understand what it takes to win this game. Instead of saying, all right, I force myself to have salad and every day for the rest of my life this is what I'm going to have, there'll be an internal emotional rebellion. It'll never last. That's why people make it, months, weeks. I saw a study the other day that the average diet lasts 72 hours. Because when you go against your emotion, you lose. You have to learn how to go with your emotion. You have to learn how to satisfy yourself in a different way than with the hamburger. And that doesn't work through forcing the salad on yourself. Have the hamburger today. Have a little smaller hamburger. Right? And then get deep into why, what makes my emotor tick? Because if I can satisfy it in different ways and I'm feeling satisfied in the moment, that hamburger just isn't going to tempt me like it did before. If you talk to someone who eats right, they don't look at the hamburger and say, oh, God, how can I force myself to not eat it? They just don't want it. It's not willpower. The brain is programmed to desire something differently.
It's an amazing analogy because as the father of a young child, I have seen bring my son up, if he's not introduced to junk food, he has no taste for it. If he is introduced to, carrot sticks, he's going to love carrot sticks. So I think there really is some validity to your points. It's a fascinating idea for a book. Never Enough Nation, the co-author is Jeff Gaines. He's been our guest today. The website, again, that folks can visit you, Jeff?
Website's neverenoughnation.com. And we are up on Amazon with both paperback and Kindle edition as well.
Best of luck to you and your co-author, Jim Sorensen, on the book. It's Never Enough Nation, available now in bookstores everywhere, at Amazon.com and at NeverEnoughNation.com. Jeff Gaines, thank you for joining us today from Minneapolis.
Thanks for having me here, Burke. Really enjoyed it.
You bet. From our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., I'm Burke Allen. Thank you so much for listening. Now go out and make it a great day.